If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks, for closet Christs. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny.
Greetings in the divine love of the one supreme divine self. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command, Cosmic Pep Talks for Closet Christs. This evening, our seminar topic is waiting, patience, surrender. So if you're ready, take a deep breath and call yourself forward in your divine presence. Inhabit your body. Allow the whole spirit to fill you all the way from the top of your head to the bottom of your feet. And expand your sense of being until there's a spacious presence with no boundaries. And occupy the love that you are. That is the true self. And we'll begin with a reading from Sai Baba. Embodiments of Divine Atma, spend your life in cherishing sacred thoughts, listening to good things, speaking good words, and doing good deeds. If all of you adopt this path, happiness and prosperity will reign in the world. No government or politician or anyone in the world can protect you from troubles and disasters. There is only one who can protect you, and that is the Supreme Lord. To seek His protection, all you must do is wholeheartedly pray. Let all people in the world enjoy bliss. Under all circumstances, we must have peace. When can this peace be obtained? Only when the heart is pure can there be peace. Without purity, peace cannot enter the heart, and thus cannot enter the world. We may pretend to be peaceful, but that is not peace, it is mere acting. With purity and peace, everything is achievable. There are three P's. They are purity, patience, and perseverance. When all three of these are present, you have the grace of God. So Sai Baba always links the condition that we are experiencing in the outer world with the state of human consciousness. There's no difference. The world reflects, resounds, and plays back to us in exact measure the quality of the energy that we put into it. And so there's no point in trying to fix the world from an unfixed state of consciousness. And that's what we want to look at tonight. We want to look at what it is to actually move into that state that Sai Baba is speaking of, where only goodness emanates from us. And thus, goodness will be transferred into the world. Now, in that discourse, although his discourses are for all of humanity, he's speaking generally to people who are there in his ashram, who are presumably committed to a spiritual path. And it's those of us that are consciously committed to a spiritual path that are actually the vanguard of the transformation that's occurring on the planet. And it doesn't take a lot of leavening for the whole loaf of bread to rise, just a small amount. And we are like that leavening agent that causes the loaf of human consciousness to begin to rise. We are the bread of life. We are the staff of life. We are the light of the world. And that's our dharma. That's our positioning right now at this very crucial time in the human state of consciousness. Now, regarding waiting, patience, and surrender, there is, if we could but remember, a perfect divine order and working out of every situation in our lives. Every one of us on a more conscious spiritual path is familiar with the tests involving waiting, patience, and surrender. Baba often says, time waste is life waste. And worry and hurry and control dramas and mental anxiety waste time. They waste life and energy, and we wear out before attaining the goal of life, which is to awaken to our liberated self. So note, when we say surrender, it's not like one would surrender victory, as in a situation of war or defeat. No, that's not what we mean. Spiritual surrender is an act of victory and triumph over one's own lower nature, which invariably runs the impatience and control dramas. So, not one of us enjoys having to wait while not certain of an outcome. And being patient where one's future is hanging out in limbo land is not fun. Well, it could be fun, I suppose, if we were patient and fully surrendered to the divine order and its working out of all the details. However, that's very seldom the case, as most of us know from our own personal experience. So in general, we want what we want when we want it. And we want to know every little detail of when and how it's to be delivered. And we often even pay for insurance to be sure it will be delivered safely. Or we know who to blame and hold responsible if it isn't. And yet, how differently the divine spirit works in our lives in teaching us to fully trust and yield to its perfect order and timing. Boy, you know, attaining total surrender to the divine order and working out of our life plan, it's really like winning the gold medal in the spiritual Olympics. So just think of surrender as the gold medal and your life as the spiritual Olympics. And we're taught by divine spirit, by the situations that arise daily in our lives. It's the little things. And we learn that those things that we do that delay or derail the gratifying things that we would like to have happen, the results that we desire, it's those things that show us where we're trying to push our ego's agenda, our will, rather than allowing spirit to just arrange and orchestrate. And there's a fine line between being passive and being proactive. We're not talking about waiting in the sense of passivity necessarily, and I say that advisedly, because I do believe that according to where we're integrated in our understanding of who and what we are, we have to act from the belief system of the nature of self that we are. Are you operating from the knowing of the self as in self-realization? Do you know that you're the Son of God? Do you know that you're one with the Father? Then you're going to act very differently than if you believe you're a human being that is here as a servant of God, as a messenger of God. You see what I'm saying? So depending on where you position yourself in your understanding, and this is not something that you take on, this is something that simply is your sense of self, you will act differently. But it's always safe to say that you do what you can do with what you have at hand here and now. You don't jump into the future, you don't hang on to the past, but you act appropriately within the given moment. When you do that in a spirit of dedication and surrender, generally you'll be correctly oriented. The whole thing is that the divine spirit is teaching each one of us from within and within the context of our particular life and the events around us how to fully trust and yield to divine perfect order and timing. And I think that disappointments eventually teach us, and hopefully so, that something better has been divinely planned for us. If we could just use that as our default knowing, every time we're disappointed, that something has been divinely planned for us that's better. And every life has a higher plan to which every situation is leading us. Step by step, our life is said to be divinely guided or flowing in grace when our personal self is cooperating willingly with our soul purpose. When we're cooperating willingly with our soul purpose, that would look like acceptance of that which is, wouldn't it? And surrender, I think, could be said to be total when the personal self is fully integrated and merged and become one with its soul and its soul plan. You know, that's when you really know that you're in the right place at the right time, doing the right thing. You've landed, in other words, in your own life. I think it's important to own, accept, and love everything, everyone, all situations. Just own it and love it all. Every part of our nature and everything in our life, nothing is designed to hurt us or harm us or is going against our plan, our path, our overall directive of merging and full freedom with the divine self. And when you regard all that happens as beneficial, Baba says we should always say, no matter what happens, this is good for me. This is good for me. Because God would never give you anything that was not ultimately good for you. And if you begin to look at your life and all events as part of your own yoga of divine union, and to regard everything and everyone in your life experience as a helper in your awakening and self-mastery, that's going to take a lot of stress out of relationships and out of the situations you find yourself in, which are very, very many times contentious and problematic. So awakening is simply the returning of your awareness to present peace, to your own spacious presence and being. And, you know, that's as complex as it gets. It's just the return of the self to the self. Baba puts it this way. What is the use of searching in the jungle of the material world for the quiet available only in the silence of inner awareness? It's like searching under a street lamp for something you've lost in your room. Yourself you have lost. Search for it in you. That is the path of wisdom. He has a way of like cutting to the chase, you know. So if you check this out for yourself, you'll discover that every personal problem seems to, at least in my estimation, to do with the three M's. Me, money, and mate. The me is always asking, what am I going to do? Where am I supposed to go? What am I going to eat? What should I wear? Where will I live? How will I work? What should I make as my life career? How will I heal my body? You know, it's always about me and the body. And then there's money. How can I make more of it? Or how can I invest it safely? Or how can I safeguard what I have? Or, and always, I think, how can I make more of it? And then there's mates. When am I going to find my perfect right, Mr. Right and Ms. Right, or my twin flame, or someone who will love me for who I am? someone who will take care of me, provide for me, give me a home, a family, so forth and so on. So if you look closely at your own life, your own desires, perhaps even your own prayer life, you'll see that these elements of me, money, and mate are the, you know, the key players here. And human suffering and all the drama, you know, it all arises out of these desires. And yet Baba says they're endless, that the mind itself is made of the warp and woof of desire. And when you begin to pull those threads out one by one with discernment and discrimination, pretty soon that whole matrix collapses and you're in the bliss of God. You're in Satchitananda. And that's the goal. So it's not fulfilling the desires because you can't. They're just going to keep arising and arising. But you can transcend to a observer position in your life where you can see them coming, you can see where they're going, you can see that they're ephemeral, you can see that they keep arising, you can see that they come from a part of you that is unconscious and really not aware of what it's generating. So you can live above desire and put a ceiling on them so that you can fulfill the natural desires that are part of life, but not to be taken over by them to where you're like submerged in this pool of endless need and wanting and questing. So the spiritual life has higher aspirations of divine contact and intimacy and communion and ultimately union, resulting in complete emancipation, complete freedom within and without, and illumination. It's the same thing. So the stepping stones along that higher path of illumination are waiting and patience and surrender. And waiting in this sense is becoming more sensitive to timing. Sensitive to timing. Sometimes we're not in sync with the divine natural order of things. And we need to cultivate the recognition when something is not flowing smoothly. And if you look, you'll generally find that you need to check the ego's impatience to control, dominate, and manipulate outcome. Usually, when it doesn't feel clear, there's a pushing out of the natural unfoldment of the situation. Remember, when God acts, it's never just for one. There's a whole series of people and situations and things that come into alignment for a particular gestalting to occur that is mutually beneficial for everyone. Baba often likens it to God being like the engine of a train, and he loads up many freight cars. And only when all those freight cars, i.e. human situations, are lined up, does he start the engine. And then they're all pulled in line. And then everyone benefits. The ego actually acts unconscious of and unmindful and uncaring of how that's going to impact other people. It just wants what it wants when it wants it. But the divine plan is that everyone should be bettered and blessed and prospered and more peaceful and enhanced by that action. So God only acts for the good of all beings. And if we would exercise our own godhood, we would do the same. So stress, anxiety, worry, mental agitation, all of that uptightness are like warning signs that the ego is trying to run the show. So we need to remind ourselves to take a deep breath, relax, let go, let God. Where are you? Here. What time is it? Now. Who are you? Atma, or God. So remind yourself that your life is divinely ordered and has a perfect divine design to it, just for you. Remember, you do not see the bigger picture. So you need to trust the one who created you to know what is best for you. As you stay present here and now, you will quickly realize that you can always handle here and now. We're always psyched up for the present moment, always. And you're never given anything you can't handle. However, it usually will stretch you beyond what you thought you could handle because there's always a growth factor here and an expansion factor. And the expansion factor is your awareness. Your awareness begins to expand. So it's probably going to stretch you beyond your capacity that you thought you had, but you'll find that you will stretch and handle it nevertheless. I found that we always rise to the occasion demanded of us. And it's in those very moments that the inner hero emerges on the scene. I think we have many instances now today with all the storms and tornadoes and floods and everything, where in the midst of all that disaster, people of all ages are acting heroically to save others. And I think we'll come to realize more and more that it's the difficult times that evoke our divinity. And that divinity is by its very nature selfless and heroic. In fact, it's another thing to bear in mind that these most intense outer trials and tribulations are really staging arenas where higher initiations are being taken by those involved. What's an initiation? An initiation is the entering into an expansion of awareness. And moving into it, you then are in new territory. And you have to move in, acclimate, learn the new governing principles, because each level, each initiation has a whole different template that it operates in and through. You have to learn that, and then you have to establish yourself at that level. So initiation is a whole process that involves a whole reorientation inwardly, and consequently that's reflected outwardly in your life. So why not train your mind to think along these lines rather than only looking at things in their surface appearance and interpreting them according to the way the world thinks? We have to think differently. Now, Sai Baba left, according to our estimation, it looked like 10 years before he said he was going to leave his body. He left his body at 85 or 86, depending on how you count it, Western or Eastern astrology. But that aside, the point is that he said that he left the physical so that he could work in his subtle body till age 95, 96, when he was supposed to, quote, leave, to help us all pass through these times. And we are going to need it. However, Sai Baba assures us that there will be no Third World War, and that not a hair on the head of anyone that's fully surrendered to the divine will be harmed. So you can see that surrender to the divine is really a major key to us being able to move through these times. Because things are happening in the world and are at stake that are the close of a 26,000-year cycle and several smaller, lesser cycles, and the equal entering into a whole new dispensation. So it's not business as usual. It's not life as usual. And we can expect, I would say, this golden age, according to things that he has said and alluded to be blossoming around 2022, 2024, in there somewhere. Not that God is in any way tied to our understanding of time, because he's not. He operates as the master of time. But he has alluded to this and told certain individuals different things. And I think that's probably a good thing that we can look towards. So we're right at that time when he said we actually have exited the Kali Yuga, the age of darkness. But like the blades of a fan, it doesn't stop instantly. There's like a rotation of the blades, even when the electricity has been pulled, before the new state is revealed in the case of a fan and in the case, in this analogy, of the world. So we can put ourselves in the very best position for our physical well-being by practicing surrender in the little things in our life initially, and then we're going to be able to handle the bigger things as they come along with greater forbearance and greater patience and greater surrender and greater willingness to wait until it's really, really clear to act. And being patient and waiting for the divine go sign before we act out of the ego's impatience and frustration is our challenge, isn't it? I think personally that it's really important to be sweet and stay sweet as you move through your day. What does that look like? It looks like being really conscious and kind when you talk to people. I was talking to the Social Security people the other day, and I waited 4 hours listening to the elevator music, which actually is rather pleasant, finally for someone to answer me. And instead of being in ego and impatience, and you know, I just was really, really quiet and patient and calm and sweet. And the first thing I said to the person was, "My goodness, bless your heart. It certainly is, there's a lot of people that you have to serve. They're serving 50 million people in the United States. Can you imagine 50 million people? And my sweetness and patience and kindness in addressing how he must have been feeling made him so sweet and so patient and so kind that he took extra care to explain certain things to me and to do things for me that even though the office was closed in my area of the world where I needed action to take place, he handled it for me, which would not have happened if I had gone into arrogance and ego and vented my spleen on him, or my ego on him. So try that. When you're talking to someone on the other phone, remember that's God. You're speaking to your beloved. You're speaking to the Lord. And stay conscious and stay kind. Stay sweet. Speak softly. Baba says that the language of love is always soft and sweet speech. And although we can't always oblige, we can always speak obligingly. So notice that every interaction is with God, no matter what the context, no matter what it is. Stay conscious that that's the beloved. And another one of hers fabulous disguises. And, you know, when it's time to act, pay attention that it always feels really clear, 100%. There's no glitches, there's no hitches, there's no reservations, there's no, none of that fishing around. There's just a sense of clarity and inner peace inside of you. And until it feels like that, wait. Stay alert and present. And handle here and now as best you can, leaving the how-tos to God's arranging. The other key is to use what you have at hand Many people worry about what they're going to do tomorrow when they still have plenty in their hand to use today. You know, sufficient unto the day is the substance thereof. Give us this day our daily bread. So daily bread is given for the day, or as some people look at it, if they don't have daily bread, they look at it as a fasting day. Again, as something that's good for you. And the substance of the day is always enough to appropriately meet the moment. And then share whatever God gives to you. It's to be shared with your brothers and sisters. And our dharma, really, on this planet is to try to make the people that we interact with happy. How do you make someone happy? You don't criticize and condemn them. You don't speak ill of them. You know, Baba says that the pollution we have in our atmosphere, that it's caused by our human unconscious speech, our negative thoughts, our hateful emotions. This is what's called causing global pollution. So be careful not to pollute through unconscious speech. Think before you speak. Think. Baba says that so often people are totally unconscious of the effect of sound. To abuse sound, he said, is to abuse akasha. It's to abuse akashvani, you know, the divine sound current. It's to abuse it. So he says it's wise to speak as little as possible and only when necessary, and only speak things that are pleasant, pure, uplifting, and that would encourage and increase the strength and the health and the immune system of your listener. When you say negative things, hurtful things, fearful things, it depletes the nervous system. It releases harmful chemicals in our bloodstream. So Baba has said that 1 or 2 minutes of anger will pollute the whole bloodstream for 3 months and negate your spiritual practice, the effects of your spiritual practice for that long as well. Just 2 minutes of anger. And the liver is poisoned, and that's what causes liver disease. It causes a whole disruption of the digestive tract. And anger is really epidemic right now, and it's quite contagious. So do everything in your power to keep yourself in control, to keep calm, to keep peaceful, to keep centered, and not to feed into anything that would increase the anger or the illness in another person. That will create karma for you. So we must all begin by taking responsibility for the energies that we host and radiate to one another and into this world. And then I think an awakening person, that's where they start. They begin to take conscious control over the impact that they make upon their environment. And they make a real concerted effort to direct themselves in ways that do not inflict upon others or the environment. So take responsibility for the thoughts and feelings you generate, the effects they can arouse in another. Baba says that we receive the karma from the effects that we arouse in another. For example, if a woman dresses provocatively and causes lustful thoughts in another person, or vice versa, a man, that the karma of that comes to the person that caused that arousal. So you see how responsible we need to be in our behavior. And the main thing is to refrain from speaking ill of anyone, of criticizing, complaining, gossiping, passing judgment upon yourself or another, and to speak softly and with respect to everyone. We really can know nothing of another's karmic burden or another's spiritual state, so we must wish the very best for everyone, who, like ourselves, is doing the very best at this time that they know how. To know better is always to do better. So genuine learning and awareness is always evidenced by our behavior. Always. And that is how we're going to start shifting the pollution area on the planet. People worry about things like radiation and the massive animal die-offs and all of that sort of thing. But I have a rather unpleasant thing to share with you, not to deplete your immune system, but this is something Baba shared with several devotees, but one in particular, who shared it on a YouTube. And the thing is this, that Baba said that he is allowing humanity to, quote, destroy the earth, because only when mankind is brought to their knees will they turn to God. Now, I was present in 1985 when he said something along those lines as well. And he said, and mankind will turn to God. That there will be a period of 7 years, I think we're sure in that, when mankind will be brought to their knees. You know, we're kind of in that now. Everybody's talking about extinction scenarios, and people are very, very frightened in general and very concerned about the state of the planet. Not everyone. Some are in denial or unconscious, but a lot of people are very concerned. But they turn to the media. They turn to scientists. They turn to each other. But how many are actually turning to the Creator? How many are actually turning to the Creator? I think more and more, actually, myself. At least those are the people I hang out with. But the point is, we're living life as if God were an amusing pastime for the elderly and not too intelligent. As if God were an option. As if God were a doting grandfather in the sky or a, you know, bolt-throwing, vengeful, wrathful, whatever. But understanding that God is the indweller in all hearts, that God is the Atma, God is the universal spirit, God is the one projector of all of this, not just projector, but creator of all that you see. You might say creation is the dress of God, is the expansion of that creative consciousness. Although, you know, in our way of seeing through the ego mind, it's quite distorted. Like a stick, if you'd stick a stick in water, you'd see how it would look bent and distorted. That's how we see. We don't really see things as they are through the ego mind. But when you move into that more enlightened, awakened state, you begin to see the whole world transform into Satyam Shivam Sundaram. You see truth, you see goodness, and you see beauty. That's the mystic vision that awakens when you have moved into that higher awareness. You notice that the whole world looks differently. People look differently. You look right past the ego and you see the beauty, the light, the divinity. So all part of the surrendering process is to realize that everything you look at is divine and worthy of love and worthy of respect and is beautiful and is doing the role play that it's been assigned by the great divine theater director, God. Every one of us has been accorded our role, given our costume, even fed the lines. You know, the teleprompter giving each one of our lines is God. He's directing the whole thing. He's acting as all the actors. And he's working the props. You know, it's all a big, big theatrical drama, which in Sanskrit is called Leela. It's the divine play. And it's, you know, we're to enjoy it. were to play our roles really well, just not to lose ourselves in them or forget who we are. I think I told you something that happened to me back in the early 90s when I was integrating with this particular physical personality that I'm, how would you say it, embodying through at this time. And I was standing in a conference chamber upon the inner realms, and I was surrounded by all of these beings that all looked kind of alike. They were all dressed in long white robes. They had long white hair. They had long white beards. They had eyes that were, you know, white flame coming out of their eyes. They were powerful beings. And I was in the center, and each one of them addressed me in this deep voice, and they said, "Athena, remember, you are not human. You are divine." And there were 12 of them, and they all said the same thing in the same deep tone of voice. And then, bam, I was back in my body. But I never forgot it. It's like, oh my gosh, remember. And I say that to each one of you. Remember, you are not human. You are divine. The human phase is a little dream of separation. And the only sin is when we looked away from the face of our wholeness and chose to see differentiation, or none exists. And that cost us the Edenic state of conscious oneness with God. We looked away from the Father, which actually is our own Atma, our own monadic self. So to reverse that, we simply recognize that to see separation where none exists, to postulate that, is to align yourself with the energy that is the Father of all lies and that lives as the lower ego mind. It takes the shape of the ego mind. And so to return to God, to love God, since God is a spirit that is omnipresent and invisible, the only way we can really do that is to see God in each other. That's the only way we can do it, is to see God in each other. And you can tell where you are on the path when you can see another and remember and recognize that that person is divine. And when that's all you see, you have God realization. And then the whole thing just vanishes like a mirage. And you find in highest truth, you've never left the heart of God. It was all just like this mirage. If you've ever been out on a hot desert highway where it's so hot you can see the heat waves sweltering and making everything kind of wiggly and zigzaggy in front of your eyes, and you could swear that there's a pool of water in front of your car. It looks so real. And then you almost expect to hear a splash as you come close. And then you find it just vanishes. It's just a mirage. The whole dream, Baba said, that we think of as our outer world will vanish like that the closer you get to God. The closer you get to God realization, the less you pay attention to the world. It fades away. That's the only way you're ever going to stop the world and get off. The home you seek is your own heart, it's your own holiness, it's your own wholeness, which is the same as holiness. And that wholeness is the shalom of God, which is another term for being healed and whole and holy. Shalom, that wonderful Hebrew word, carries that full implication. In Sanskrit, it would be prashanti. Prashanti. You become the prashanti nilayam, the abode of supreme peace. You are that peace that you seek. You are that holy abode. So these are things we need to hear over and over and over because we've been programmed over and over and over that we're not that. The whole world will tell you that everything I'm telling you is crazy. But I may be crazy, but I'm a happy crazy. So you can be happy crazy, God, or you can be a very miserable human being. You can play any role that you want. So, to quote A Course in Miracles, whenever I am not wholly joyous, it's because I have acted unlovingly to one of God's creations. Pay attention whenever you get gnarly and short and arrogant and prideful and you're into your stuff and your drama and your ego. Notice how your heart clamps down, how awful you feel. And if you're on the spiritual path, you'll feel so guilty afterwards, you'll just feel miserable. Is it worth it? I don't think so. And that's the price of acting unlovingly. You instantly sacrifice your joy and your peace. And that happens the minute you judge yourself or another. The heart just clamps down like a little clam. Whenever you criticize or find fault, you know, whenever you speak ill of yourself or judge yourself or another, you are cursing your own life. You know, I made a statement the other day. I said I hated something. And oh my gosh, the energy that came into me. And God spoke into my heart and he said, do you realize that you just cursed that state, one of the states here in America? Do you realize you just put a curse on it? I said, I did. He said, yes. Don't you know who you are? Don't you know that you have the power of blessing or cursing with your speech? And it brought me up so short. It's like, oh my gosh, I have to be so careful. We all do. Because when you get to a certain level, your words are the words of God, literally. And you have the power to bless or curse. And we should never use our speech to curse. And again, you curse when you express a negative opinion or you make a statement that is inherently false. Anyway, I apologize to that state. I apologize to God. And I forgive myself. And I have been very, very busy watching my mouth ever since then, not to say that I hate anything or even dislike. If I say I dislike something, I've actually found a food expressing sorrow. Sai Baba said that everything in nature, even on so-called inanimate objects, have life and the ability to feel joy or sorrow. When I say I don't like something, I actually feel the offense and the hurt that is expressed by that object, whatever it is. So I'm just saying that it gets more and more close tolerant. You get more and more your chain jerked by the divine spirit the more that you enter into that awakened state. So be very careful that everything that comes out of your mouth is a blessing. Bless everything. If you can't say something nice and pleasant and blessing, keep quiet. Don't give voice. Don't give voice unconsciously to negativity. Don't. And stay awake. Stay aware. Slow down. Be patient. Be quiet. Be still. And, you know, another thing people do without any consciousness is to speak ill of a great soul. My my teacher, John Rogers, said that it's tantamount to spiritual suicide. Yeah, you cut your own throat when you do that. Never speak ill of a great person. And since you don't know who's great and who's not, why speak ill of anyone at all? You don't know who they are. You don't know their karma. You can't know the heart of another. So when anyone tries to get you to make a negative statement about the president or this person or that person, you have to learn to say, I don't know the heart and karma of another. I can't. Therefore, I can't give any comment on this. Learn that you just don't need to give an opinion and a comment on everything. And I think it's really best to leave the company of those who revel in speaking ill of others and spreading tales and gossiping. Because such talk is like poison. And it will disturb your mind and rob you of peace. And Baba said, moreover, that criticism will actually rob you of self-realization. Why? Because you've got a block between yourself and God. You know, it says in the Bible, if you have anything against your brother, don't go to the altar until you've made peace with your brother. Then go to the altar and pray or make your offering. So we can't even get in the, you know, an audience with the Holy of Holies if we have dealt unlovingly with one of God's creations. Very important. So again, our position is one of patience and waiting upon the Lord, being sensitive to the voice of God within us, which speaks in our conscience. The conscience, you know, the unseared natural conscience will always convict you and pull your chain when you've acted unlovingly. Always. They'll always feel guilt and remorse. It has a natural ethics that's the same. It's universal for all mankind. And it's not morality such as we understand it in the human sense. It's an inner sensitivity to love, to the goodness and the godness in all things. And that is, you know, these are the things that we need to pay attention to if we're going to bring our planet back from the brink of disaster where it seems to be right now, where even the animals are leaving in droves, and the bee colonies are collapsing, and the birds and the fish and all sorts of species are just dying off in massive amounts. Don't you think it's a message to us that even they don't want to be in an atmosphere of such ignorance and hatred and warfare? What would happen if they called troops and nobody showed up? If all of the people that they're calling up into war would say, nope, goes against my conscience, I'm not going to do that. What if everybody on the planet just all of a sudden just said no to all of these people that want to send them off into war? No, we're not going to fight. You want to squabble over a few miles of land? Have at it. But we're not going to fight. We're not going to kill our brothers and sisters over a stupid piece of land that somebody's arbitrarily named and appropriated as theirs. God alone owns the planet. God alone is our boss. And to God alone we can look for help at this time on this planet. So let's do that, shall we? And let's go out chanting. Let's see, what shall we chant tonight? Let's chant Shanti. Om Shanti. Shalom, Salam. Let's get all three of those different languages in there, shall we? Om Shanti. God bless you. And may the peace of God, the bliss of God, the joy of God, and the awakened heart be sent forward in a blessing to all the worlds and all the peoples of all the worlds. Adonai.